we might go a little.
I'm very excited about today's show. This is your host, Dr. Rick Klofein. One of the reasons I'm so excited is I get to grill my co-host, Dr. Susan Kolb, about her new book, The Naked Truth About Breast Implants. Listeners of this show know that I'm a board-certified gynecologist, and I'm also board-certified in holistic medicine. And Dr. Susan Kolb is board certified in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is board certified in holistic medicine, and is a spiritual healer. Dr. Kolb has taken the time, energy, and effort to write a book that is unlike any other book that I have read on these topics. And the book is called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants. Dr. Kolb's perspective on this issue is unique because she is one of the few doctors I know in this country that has a true level of experience dealing with issues that can result from the use of breast implants, particularly silicone breast implants. And her perspective is quite unique because she brings her personal experience to the table. She brings the experience of her many patients to the table, and she brings the experience of a physician, scientist, and healer to us today. And in this book that provides information that is simply not previously available. Good morning, Susan. Thank you so much for allowing me to interview you today.
Oh, well, thanks, Rick. It's a pleasure. You're my first interview in the book, so that's a first, and appropriately so on our show. I wanted to say that this book was spiritually guided, I think, because we have been gathering information for the past 20 years about treatment of unknown diseases, and I have to emphasize these diseases are unknown because the systems in existence, particularly research at universities, the government agencies charged with protecting patients and other systems have basically not addressed these problems. And the book gets into why they haven't, but certainly as is true in many of the areas that we delve into in Temple of Health's radio show with GMO foods, dangers of cellular telephones and electromagnetic fields, dangers of chemicals in our environment. There are many, many areas where public health has not been properly addressed. And that's really the core issue of this book. It's a book about breast implants, but the problem associated with the issue extends to all aspects of everybody's life. And the majority of people are just simply not aware of the problems. I had a patient who developed severe ankle swelling, and I had an idea that this was not related to her breast implants, which we had just recently removed. And indeed, upon testing, her ankle swelling, which was so bad she could hardly walk down the hall, was actually due to a corn muffin that she ate made with GMO corn. She's not allergic to regular corn, just GMO corn. And so, as you know, we've interviewed Jeffrey Smith and some other leaders in the GMO education effort. And so, this is very important information. If the meal that makes that corn muffin is bought at Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or one of the stores that endeavors to avoid GMO, then she wouldn't have had all this suffering. I cannot imagine how much suffering exists that is totally preventable if people would just know what's out there, know the dangers that are out there, that are sitting on their grocery store.
And it's such a problem because these are people go on and on with their problems and they don't have a clue.
They
don't.
It's
something that they could actually easily address.
That's right. It's so simple. But our government has chosen not to regulate, but to allow these companies to self-regulate in the case of GMO. And that's very interesting. You know, it's similar to letting the plastic surgeons do the studies on breast implants and not having any other controls around. I mean, it's true that since plastic surgeons put the breast implants in, they're going to have to be involved in the studies. But, you know, not only myself, but other organizations have documented that when the patients in the study had problems, they were told by their surgeons, even though there were very consistent problems, that FDA-funded peer review research had published in journals like the Journal of Rheumatology, they were told that that wasn't due to their breast implants. So, you know, there's something very wrong about the entire system. And in the book, we talk about, you know, the FDA scientists who were whistleblowers on the FDA. And basically, silicone implants was one of the things included, along with other things like the morning after pill. But this was, I believe this was published in one of the major newspapers. I think it was a newspaper in Washington, D.C. Anyway, the details are in the book, that 8 FDA scientists blew the whistle on the FDA for not following scientific, research, but political agendas. This was during the Bush years, and we don't know if that's changed or not, but certainly, certainly the system is not working to protect people. And you know as a doctor how many things have been pulled off the market after FDA approval. You get the, you know, the warning things like I do.
Absolutely.
And I don't know about you, but I just simply don't use drugs for the first year after FDA approval. You know, that's the prudent thing to do, is not to jump on the bandwagon and use these new drugs, especially, unless you really say to the patient, gee, you know, the FDA hasn't had a real good track record here. You know, there could be problems here that the FDA failed to uncover due to the fact the studies were skewed. And, if the patient wants to accept that risk, that's fine. But, you know, it's a very real thing, and doctors know it, you know. And I would think that once you get the reputation of not being reliable, the medical industry isn't as anxious to do something because they look stupid. You know, the doctors look stupid for giving you the drug, or worse, if somebody dies or has a significant injury.
This issue of timing can be so important, too, in terms of giving it some time to see if problems develop. I thought an interesting point you made in the book is many of the negative studies on breast implants were done in a time period oftentimes before the problems resulted.
Right. The older breast implants, the ones that I had put in me, the Dow Corning Silastic 2 gels, which were low bleed, and we thought were better because the earlier ones, the ones made in the 70s, bled out even before you put them in the patient. So you'd put them on a paper towel and there'd be a ring of silicone leaking out already. Silicone has, I don't know, about 30 different chemicals in it, many of them solvents. And if you look up solvent toxicity on the internet, you'll see the exact same problems the silicone patients have. And I go into quite a bit of detail in the book about how certain genetic factors can make that worse. And, you know, who's at risk with this? But obviously, these implants were never meant to leak this gel within the body. And the interesting thing is that the older implants, in some cases, may have been better made than the newer implants are. The older implants didn't leak for 8 to 15 years, depending on the manufacturer. Of course, you see, Dow Corning was a you know, was a branch of Dow Chemical. And now Dow Chemical, I think, is one of the most, one of the largest chemical companies in the world, if not the largest. So Dow Corning sold gel to all these other companies that made implants. And, you know, sometimes the shells were better. You know, I mean, the, there's studies showing that Surgitech had the worst leakage rate. You know, and then, so, you know, Dow Corning actually had a better leakage rate. Just like anything, when you sell the raw materials, some tires are made better than other tires. But the people selling the rubber, you know, don't always have control over how well the finished product is when it goes to another company. But in any case, these companies produce many different kinds of implants with different kinds of shells, textured, smooth, some leaked a lot worse than others. But in general, the Dow Corning Solastic 2, which is what I chose to put in me, was felt to be a superior implant. And I, frankly, as a plastic surgeon, was glad we had it. I didn't know that it would leak in 9 years because, of course, you know, it came out in 84 or 85. And what do you, I mean, how do you know when a product's going to fail? You don't. I mean, turns out there's a lipolysis reaction that occurs pretty consistently, and it occurs in the body, not necessarily out on the shelf. So in the body starts to do this lipolysis reaction, which makes the silicone shell, which is a silastic material, leaky so that the gel can come out. Now, once the gel comes out, I believe everybody gets sick. I mean, this is based on clinical experience, but, you know, women don't understand the symptoms sometimes, which is they're sometimes nonspecific fatigue, sinus infections, periodontal disease, burning pain, you know, just things that they might attribute to aging or whatever, you know, menopause. There's a lot of people who mistakenly say they thought their symptoms was due to something else. But in any case, these once it does start to leak, it's a progressive downhill illness. And I have never seen a patient ruptured or leaking severely that wasn't ill. And I don't think that, I think I would have because of my reputation as an explanting surgeon. I think at one point I would have seen somebody who was healthy. I haven't. But I will tell you that holistic treatments, because they increase detoxification pathways, those patients were able to come in a lot healthier. You know, people who quit smoking, who did herbal and immune supplements, who did detox methods, foot baths and, you know, other things that help detox, increase detox pathways, they went a lot longer before they really felt like they were going downhill. So holistic medicine works, and I guess that's, you know, you would agree that probably is true. So essentially what happened is none of this information was ever studied. The engineering data that I came across was never made available to the plastic surgeons that I know of in any concerted effort to teach them about biomaterial science of these implants. What happened was PR companies working for Dow Corning and other large companies basically created this PR thing of trying to portray the women as greedy, wanting money, not really sick, you know, all the things that you saw on TV. And a number of studies were done. Harvard, Mayo, big institutions did studies published in journals like the New England Journal of Medicine stating that implants weren't associated with systemic disease. But the problem with that, as I point out in my book, and actually I don't point it out, a doctor from Brown University points it out, that essentially you cannot do epidemiology studies on a disease that hasn't been characterized. In other words, the study said that implants don't cause rheumatoid arthritis and other known connective tissue diseases, which is a true statement. It doesn't. It causes an atypical connective tissue disease. And the FDA actually helped pay for a study that was published in the Journal of Rheumatology showing that breast implants that rupture indeed do cause fibromyalgia and other connective tissue diseases. And then they ignored this when they put silicone back on the market in 06. And then National Organization of Women, which is now, lodged a congressional complaint against the FDA saying that it went against its own research, which it did. So, you know. And anyway, a congressperson was assigned to investigate this, and I spent a lot of time talking with the aides, and of course, you know, it was all whitewashed and everything was hunky-dory. But essentially, the things that the FDA research scientists that blew the whistle on the FDA were saying had happened during that time. The people in the FDA, administrators in the FDA, were told to ignore the scientific stuff and to go ahead and go with the politically, influenced agendas, and that's what they did. Implants came back on the market now, and these implants are not better made that I have seen. Okay, now we don't know the lifespan of some of the manufacturers because they haven't been out 9-10 years. You know, but the studies that got them out, because now you have to have some studies. The FDA requires devices to have studies, unlike the ones that were grandfathered in years ago, because the FDA simply didn't test these. They wasn't on the agenda to test them. The studies have been done for less than 5 years. If the implant doesn't leak or rupture for 8 to 15 years, your studies are going to be okay in the vast majority of things. But one of the reps of one of the companies, I won't say which one, told me to put the other implants company on a paper towel and come back in a week, and sure enough, there was a ring indicating a silicone gel leakage out immediately. So I'm going to say, based on that and based on what I'm hearing, people calling in saying that they're sick, and I always ask them what brand they have, and I always get the same answer. I would say some of the new implants, not all the companies, but at least one of the companies, has a major, major problem that will probably make people sicker before my Dow Corning's made me sick.
Once a woman experiences a rupture of the implant, and that's really serious stuff. Talk to us a little bit about the difficulty in removing that and the distribution in the body.
Well, it goes out all over. The macrophage is, that's the white cell that eats things up. Well, the silicone and the chemicals can't be digested by the macrophage. It's more designed to digest bacteria. So what happens is the macrophage spreads out through whatever means, you know, in the bloodstream and the lymphatics. And a lot of silicone gets caught up in the first lymph nodes. Now, the only ones we can get to are the ones in the axilla. There's actually ones for the medial breast that go into the chest wall. We can't really get to those without opening up the sternum. But many of the patients that I see get those lymph nodes involved. And the majority of all the patients dying in my practice in the more distant past, were dying of lymphoma, very malignant lymphoma. The husband would call me up and say the person was dead of lymphoma, very rapid spreading. There was a study in Europe showing that women had 16 times, women with ruptured or leaking implants had 16 times the risk of this malignant lymphoma. And the reason that is these chemicals. About a third of the chemicals, maybe a fourth of the chemicals on that list that will be in the book, are carcinogens, and a lot of them are neurotoxins too, so neurological disease is very common. But when you have these carcinogens going into the bloodstream, we know that lymphoma is often associated with chemical exposure, and this is chemical exposure occurring within your own body. You also have peer-reviewed studies that show risk of other cancers, like brain cancer, lung cancer, colon cancer, and even other rare cancers. This is because once the implant starts to leak, the natural killer T cells, which are responsible for protecting us from cancer, are decreased. So these patients have a lot of malignancies, a lot of viral infections, and other things where the T cells are important in immune protection. So, the peer-reviewed studies show these cancers, which is interesting. The peer-reviewed studies show an increased rate of suicide, which is interesting. That's because the women can't get help. You know, everybody tells them it's not their implants. Their families start to think they're malingering. Everybody knows that implants don't cause problems. I mean, it was on your TV news. So basically, I wrote the book to show that you shouldn't be so gullible. You shouldn't just believe what you hear on the news. You should, if you're a doctor anyway, because this is an iatrogenic disease, I believe we all have a very, at least spiritually, special mission to address it and treat it. And as I say in the book, failure to do so results in specific karmic consequences, and I believe that. That I think, you know, we have to do our due diligence to identify the disease and prevent it from affecting another generation of women.
It sounds like you had a spiritual duty not just to treat it, but first to experience it yourself.
Yeah, that's the wounded healer. The first chapter, which tells my story, is the wounded healer. And you know this story. You know, it's an archetype. I've seen it not just in me, but in many of the people. You know, Dr. Garth Nicholson, who we've interviewed,
yes.
He got the Gulf War Syndrome. Teitelbaum, Dr. Teitelbaum had chronic fatigue syndrome. You know, again and again, you see these very spiritually evolved beings come in, get the disease. And because they get the disease, I think they're better able to figure out what it is. I mean, what better experiment than yourself? You know, I mean, you know me. I spend hours on the internet and read all these books and do tremendous amounts of research.
It shows in the book.
Yeah, we've interviewed the editor of a journal on silicone toxicity, Dr. Campbell. Well, hell, what I want to ask people is, if there is no danger in silicone getting into your body, how come the toxicologist had a whole journal on the toxicology
entire
of silicone?
Entire issue, a thick issue.
Yeah. I mean, and why do no plastic surgeons know about this? Why do no plastic surgeons know any of the biomaterial, the biofilm? I have the textbook on biofilms. You know, why does nobody, why do none of the plastic surgeons know about biofilms, know about quorum sensing? This is all talked about in the book. What that is that a film develops on these implants, especially textured implants, that's like a little community. There's fungus, there's bacteria, there may be viruses, there may be other parasites. I've seen some things that I really thought were parasitic when I took these implants out. So what is it that makes the people putting these in completely not read the medical literature? And you know what it is, Rick. It's because we don't read outside our specialty. Who reads outside their specialty? We're all specialized.
Yep.
And the plastic surgery literature just simply has had very little in it about the implants other than the studies that, you know, were manipulated so that they didn't show anything. And one of the interesting things is in Plastic Surgery News, I can't remember the year, but it was in the early 2000s, I think. No, it might have been in the late 1990s, but there was an article in Plastic Surgery News that said a panel of epidemiologists had looked at all that data, that those studies that I talked about earlier, the Harvard and Mayo studies, the group of studies, and said that they were inherently flawed and needed to be redone. And that actually got published in Plastic Surgery News. I cut it out because I thought it was so remarkable. So here we have a group of people looking at these studies and saying, no, these studies weren't done right. You know, they had inherent flaws, which I just pointed out. You know, they weren't studying the disease these women have. And those studies were never redone, if you remember. But they are quoted all the time as showing, you know, silicone doesn't cause systemic disease. Yeah, it causes local problems. And then saline implants are safe. And yet when you look in the peer-reviewed literature, Dr. Leroy Young did in vitro work showing that bacteria and I think later work was done on fungus, showing that fungus could also grow around implants. So, I mean, it's crazy to think that any foreign body implanted in the body is safe for everybody.
Is this about a lack of integrity? Or is it just about people just being unaware and blind, the physicians?
Well, I think it's a little of both. You know, certainly it's easier to believe what's on the evening news when you want to believe that. The plastic surgeons think that, you know, think they're ethical and good people, okay? And so they're going to rationalize what they think from these studies and what they hear out of the plastic surgery sphere to justify what they're continuing to do, which is put silicone in people without really knowing the consequences of it because it was never studied. But in the book, I say, well, your evidence is sitting in your waiting rooms. You all, if you've been putting silicone implants in, you know, for a long time, like most of us have, except the younger surgeons who came forth when there was a moratorium on them, then you know the women are sick because the women have gotten back in touch with you and said they're sick. And of course, your staff or you have told them that know that silicone doesn't cause problems, but yet you're seeing it again and again. Same thing, if you bother to actually examine them and listen to what they have to say. So it's just easier to deny the problem exists than to actually think that you might be part of a problem.
Yes.
That you didn't know.
That may not be on a conscious level in any
not.
Way, shape, or form.
Yeah, may not. Over the years, I've talked to lots of plastic surgeons about this problem, and in the book I say, you know, some of the hand surgeons, people who have hand fellowships and have primarily hand practices, are very interested. And, you know, they scientifically, it's very interesting what, you know, what the evidence is. And so they actually talk to me about it and you know, acknowledge that there's, you know, a great deal of information that needs to come out. But the other plastic surgeons, those who have cosmetic, especially cosmetic breast practices, quickly change the subject. It's obviously a very uncomfortable subject for them. And but I had a few doctors in town call me up and say, you know, I'm beginning to see this. You know, I think you may be right. You know, the ones that actually are a little more intelligent than actually observant. But you sent me a lot of patients over the year. You recognize
yes.
the syndrome. I mean,
yes.
you ask previous surgeries, and if they have these symptoms, you send them on over for treatment. So, you know, other doctors obviously could, if they weren't brainwashed about with untrue and unsubstantiated facts, they could also help women a great deal. I've talked to a lot of holistic doctors. You know, holistic doctors tend to get what's kicked out of traditional medicine. And a lot of holistic doctors and toxicologists tell me that their silicone patients are their sickest patients that they have. And the reason they're the sickest is because almost everything else can be treated. But if you don't remove those implants, and many of them didn't, you know, aren't having their implants
and remove the implants properly.
Right, right.
Which
That's
means
true.
Not just taking out the implant,
but capsule,
but removing the capsule that's the natural formation around it, and as
yeah.
much abnormal tissue as possible. And that's a long, meticulous surgery. I know the hours and hours.
Oh yeah.
That you spend on one case.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, not always, but I mean, sometimes they come out in 15 minutes. Other times they come out in 4 hours.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's, and if you don't get the capsule out, and some of the explanting surgeons routinely leave it in because it's too hard to get out, this patient stays sick for a long time, and in fact, sometimes they don't get well at all until they have another surgery. Because that capsule, oftentimes with textured implants or leaking silicone implants, has silicone in it. So you have an infected foreign body that you're leaving in the body. And the other explant surgeons, to my knowledge, are not using antifungals. And so when the patients put in antibiotics, they automatically get pretty sick because 100% of them evidently have candidiasis. I attended a lecture series given by medical people who are experts in silicone, and a rheumatologist told me privately that he tested 3,000 women for yeast and 3,000 had yeast, you know, with the antibody test. So we know because of their immune deficiency, 100% of them are going to have yeast. Well, what happens to somebody who's filled with yeast and you give them a week of antibiotics, you know?
It explodes.
It explodes, and they get so sick. And I get phone calls. Even some of my patients have gone to these other surgeons for additional surgery and gotten so sick. So I don't think the other explanting surgeons really realize what they're dealing with, how sick these patients really are, and how what the proper care is around the the perioperative period. And hopefully they'll read the book and realize the disease and start, you know, start treating
properly.
Right,
because it's properly. Much more than the surgery. The surgery helps remove the burden and the load, but it's really about protocols that help the body and the terrain to heal and detoxify. And, of course, it took many years for you to develop protocols for that.
Right. I used the Institute of Functional Medicine's stuff or you know, writings. And,
right. Their detoxification charts and
right.
theories are so wonderful because they make scientific sense.
And so, you know, basically, as you know, there's two stages of intracellular detoxification that occurs primarily in the liver. And then there's one other thing to consider, which I'll get to in a minute. But the first stage has to do with the cytochrome 450 enzyme system. And the danger here is that if you're on medicines that or supplements that are making that go real fast, and yet you have a glutathione deficiency, which is in the second stage of intracellular detoxification, you'll build up a bunch of free radicals. And if you look at the diseases that these women get, oftentimes, it's because of these free radicals. Free radicals are destructive in the body. They make you age quicker. They increase your risk of heart disease and stroke. They increase your risk of cancer. They increase your risk of vessel disease. And they make you sick. I mean, I took the description of what happens with this and compared it to what the women have, and it's virtually the same thing. So if you have a bunch of free radicals, you're going to get sick. And it causes neurological problems. It causes, you know, just every single thing that we're seeing in the women. So most of the protocol is to try to get that second phase of intracellular detoxification up to speed, and that's increasing glutathione levels in the body. And then there's another thing that the Institute of Functional Medicine said is so important, and that is maintaining a more alkaline state than acid state. And I don't know, we really haven't done any books on acid-alkaline balance recently, but we probably should, because that's an important topic. If you're more alkaline, viruses, fungi, even bacteria tend to grow less in the body, and detoxification pathways are cleared better. You know, they can get stuff through. So I talk about all this in the book, and then, of course, there's a genetic factor, and I think I had that genetic factor, where the biotoxins produced by the fungus cannot be eliminated by certain people. One-fourth of the population cannot eliminate biotoxins. So biotoxins can occur in the fungus around the silicone that's leaking out, or it can occur in the saline that has any valve defects, because, of course, you got this big water area with a valve defect, and then fungus starts growing in the implant. These women get really sick. And one-fourth of the population is susceptible to what we call sick building syndrome. And we've interviewed Dr. Richie Shoemaker, his book Mold Warriors, on this. And he developed a huge amount of science on this. But essentially, if you've got this genetic condition, you're prone to fibromyalgia, because whenever you're in a moldy building or moldy internal environment, you're going to develop fatigue, muscle ache, mental clouding, you know, the whole endocrine disruption, immune disruption, and neurological problems. A very complex disease, and one that medical science still has yet to really
with all
recognize.
The rains that we've had in Atlanta.
Oh my goodness. I've been fighting it, especially because my crawl space flooded. But I found something that was helpful. That was like a drop or two of tea tree oil in a neti pot. And, you know, with the flu going around, the majority of people dying of this swine flu are dying of staph pneumonia. So I think that all of us in the medical profession would benefit by doing this neti pot with a little tea tree oil in order to get the methicillin-resistant staph out of our nose. That might be life-saving, if you think about it. It also may kill the virus. I think the flu virus stays in your nose for about 2 or 3 days before it makes you sick.
The people who have a genetic predisposition to not handling the biotoxin well, I think that if attention was paid to this, we're moving into the realm of testing that could actually be identified.
that is an important thing to identify, but most people know that. I mean, by the time you're of age, you know, over 20 to get breast implants, you know whether or not you have a tendency to fibromyalgia. Because look at all the moldy places there are. I mean, you went on vacation somewhere that some beach house was moldy and got sick. So we could get that through history as well as testing. The thing I point out in the book that's really important to test is for an HLA. It's HLA B27 or HLA 53. Those two have been, their genetic types have been identified. Any silicone at all that goes in their body makes them sick right away. And this could be a shunt. This could be any implant. It doesn't have to be a breast implant. It could be a lot of silicone, in food, because there's a huge amount of silicone
cosmetics.
In capsules and cosmetics. And if you put a silicone-based skincare treatment on your face, know that silicone goes right into your body because it is hydrophobic, so it's not repelled by normal barriers. It gets sucked right in. So basically, silicone is not well tolerated by certain HLA types, and they're the ones that tend to get these autoimmune diseases. And it was really interesting. I have 8 patient stories in the book, and one of the stories is an FDA research scientist who knew all the research that the FDA had approved and went ahead and got saline implants, but she got sick right away. And she called me up, and I said, I think you have HLA B27, and sure enough, she did. And so getting her implants out was very important, but like you say, it could have been prevented because in most cases, unless you're adopted, you're going to know if your family has this HLA type because your uncle has ankylosing spondylitis, your mother's sister has rheumatoid arthritis.
That's easily and commonly available.
Right, right. And you can do the testing. I mean,
right.
If you just want to know, say you're adopted and you don't know, certainly you can do the testing. But none of these things, even though Leroy Young did the research on the HLA 53 years ago, I mean, I don't know exactly, it's in the book, I referenced this article, but Dr. Young did this research, and yet nobody ever suggested after that we ought to test for it. I guess it's just easier not to, because anything that delays that sale or that augments a problem for the plastic surgeon. They don't want to wait a couple of weeks to get a lab test back. The patient may change their mind about surgery. I mean, that's the practical aspect. So,
among colleagues across the country, or maybe internationally, are there other plastic surgeons who have a perspective on this that you're portraying?
Only one that I know of, and I believe she's in Denmark, or one of the Scandinavian countries. I did recently have a doctor who's not a surgeon get very ill because she had an HLA problem. She was a triathlon runner and a physician in the German Army or Air Force. And so much more physically healthy than I've ever been, okay? And within a week of getting implants, she was in the bed, and after about 5 weeks or 6 weeks, had a diagnosis of 6 different autoimmune diseases. And she was told she just had to learn to live with it. So she got on the internet and found me, came over, got explanted. So I've got her as a resource over in Germany. She would be able to direct people over there to, more. Germany has a lot of homeopathic physicians.
Yes.
And holistic-based doctors that a lot more advanced than the majority of, similar doctors here in the U.S. So hopefully we'll be able to maintain the network for the women over there. Here in the United States, there's only a couple of explanting surgeons. None of them, to my knowledge, are using any detox methods or even antifungals around
just
the time
doing
of
the surgery.
Some aren't using drains. Some are not removing the capsules. It's very hard to remove all the capsules in some patients. A couple do. Well, one I know. I only know one explanting surgeon that always removes the capsule. So, they don't. But without knowing the science, you're not going to know what you need to do. You're not going to know, like I talked about earlier, the biofilm information, the if there's a little party going on in there in the capsule that is producing the biotoxins and producing, you know, a home for these organisms that is not able to be gotten to by the immune system, even with IV antibiotics, obviously, you have to do something surgically. I mean, that's the only thing left to do, as you know. It's an infected foreign body, even though the foreign body is just silicone within that capsule. And so one of the things I do want to say, I don't know if any plastic surgeons will actually listen to this interview, but please, if a woman's sick, please do not stick a needle in a saline implant to drain it, either in surgery or before surgery. You know, it's kind of a experiential thing, but my sickest patients have had this done, and they require sometimes IV antibiotics, really strong antifungals for like 6 to 8 months, sometimes longer, to get the infection out of their chest wall once that implant's been punctured. So, you know, do yourself a favor, make your incision bigger to get it out, or go ahead and use a valve from the company to put in and drain it out before you take the implant out. And certainly don't expose her whole chest wall tissues to this infected fluid. It can be a real difficult problem. So,
I've known you for at least a dozen years now. I've never known you to be a shrinking violet. That's for sure. And I also know about your military trained. So, you know, it feels very much when I read this book that you're really stepping out there.
Yeah, I am. You're also aware I had trouble in the past because I stepped out on national news programs, CNN and National Fox News. There are powers that be that do not want this information out, and there's powers that paid large multi-million-dollar amounts to keep certain information sealed in court documents, and that information's in the book. You and I have interviewed many of the leaders in the military and the government on remote viewing. Joseph McMonagle, considered the number one remote viewer in the country at one point. Russell Targ, a laser physicist who developed the remote viewing information program for the military and ran it for 20 years out of the Stanford Research Institute. So we have connections into that arena. Remote viewing is interesting in that you can remote view, and Dr. Targ said this based on scientific studies, you can remote view future events as easily as present events. There's no difference because the vantage point you're viewing from is not based in time-space, as you know. So, given that, you can remote view future potential dangers. I have been, I guess, guided to do so. And I've had considerable help with this. And certain scenarios, which might, we would call them probable futures, which might not even be thought of yet. You know, they might yet to be even considered, have been identified. They have been identified. Detailed information has been taken as to location, names of people, the companies that employ them, the physical descriptions, and that information has been already forwarded to authorities. So, you know, it is protective in that I have a great deal of information about what scenarios to avoid. And what's interesting is that probably hasn't even been planned yet. Isn't that like just fascinating? But, you know, the government...
When you work with these types of techniques, then the way we think of linear time is not always in play.
No. Well, the vantage point, I mean, I did remote viewing, you know, and I was involved in remote viewing in college in experiments there, and I have practiced it since then, and of course a lot of my friends are really experts at it. When you combine your efforts, and also when you have, I guess, the quality of information coming in that we have. It just is simply protective. I mean, and then I have, police authorities that I work with on a regular basis that, I don't know whether I told you, but, I ran the crime when they broke into my office at 1867. And then I told the detective it was a white male with long hair driving a white car, and where he parked, he left the lights on, and what he did. And then he actually came back and broke in again, and they caught him, and he was a 27-year-old white male with long hair, and you know, the whole thing. Driving a white car. And so the DeKalb police officer asked me if I wanted to work for the police force, and I said no, you know, I'm busy. But you know, you can run crimes, and I'm actually pretty good at it. I was in a group of doctors up in the doctor's lounge one day, and you remember those DC snipers?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, there's two of them. One's around 40. He's ex-military. And you can't tell he's there because he's hiding and the gun is pointing out through a slit. And then I just on CNN had a special showing the vehicle just a few days ago, because I think he's up to be put to death on the 12th of November. And, everything I saw, because I just see it as a movie in my mind, everything I saw was on the TV. And, you know, I mean, I could probably prove it if anybody wanted me to. I remember the doctors that were in the room when I said it. And I also said that, that's why they're not catching them, is because they're looking for, evidence of two people. And there's not. The one person is, you know, it looks like just one person is in the car. So, these kinds of things are done all the time by our government. The remote viewers work for the government. They work for the FBI, and they gather information. Anytime there's a kidnapping, they're brought in. The public may or may not know it, but if you Google remote viewing, you can see all the courses out there, all the conventions on remote viewing. It's certainly not anything that is hidden anymore. And
it's been around for a long time.
And I think, isn't George Clooney in the new movie Men Who Stare at Goats? You know, that new movie's out. Now, Russell Targ never told us that men stared at goats and killed them, did he? There was never an interview we did with him.
I don't remember him saying anything like that.
He did say that the Russians were really good at remote strangulation. I remember him saying that. And I never knew that I had actually met some of the Russian remote viewers when there was a conference on remote viewing here in Atlanta. And my impression was that they were even better than the American remote viewers. The Americans were ex-CIA. They had gone out and formed companies after being remote viewers connected with the government. And I listened to both of them. And I just thought the Russians were, just a different quality. But then, I don't know if they're still doing it in Russia. But certainly, for our listeners, the reason that the U.S. government put all these resources, these millions of dollars worth of testing and everything is outlined in Dr. Targ's books and Joseph and Monica's books together, they paint the picture. But the reason they did it is because the Russians were so far ahead of them. And basically, with remote viewing, of course, your ability to maintain military secrets is compromised severely. And as Russell Targ said, there's no difference in reading the future than reading the present, or even reading the past. There's no difference because the point you're reading at it from is outside of space and time. So that's just the way it is.
The use of those techniques are widespread.
Well, they are now, yeah.
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 Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about the spiritual lessons to be learned.
Well, there's a chapter on that. And basically we talk about the lessons for the patients. You know, not to put your trust in outside authority completely. I mean, it's one source of information, but you also have to use your own intuition. You can go on the internet and find out if people are having problems with a particular procedure, or, gather information from more than one source. And then try not to be a victim. So many of the women are, like, so victimized, and they can't get out of that victim mentality. There are things that can be done to regain your health. There are things that can be done to, you know, to prevent it from happening again. And, you know, you just have to use the resources that are available. And one of the most powerful resources is that of prayer. I think almost all of the women's stories start with prayer, you know, praying for help, asking for help, asking your guides, your guardian angels, your, you know, your non-physical help that is available to you to help you. And I think as humans, we forget that we have a great deal of non-physical help available, but we have to ask for it. And that's always what, you know, the different religions say. You've got to ask. So go ahead and ask, and then pay attention to what comes forth. I mean, if somebody says, hey, I was on the internet the other night and found this site on breast implant problems, and it sounds like what you have, why don't you go look at it? You actually have to go online and look at it, you know. It's like you got to do something. But this kind of stuff will come forth. And to date, only women who went online could find me. I was on the Today Show and in People Magazine back in 2004, and about 150 phone calls came after that. But other than that, I've kind of stayed out of the public eye because of some of the things that have happened until I put the book out. So the book will allow other people that maybe aren't as internet savvy or don't use that form of research to find information. You know, the other thing is not to put blind trust in, say, your family doctor when things aren't getting better for you. You've got to go out and gather more sources of information. Of course, there's lessons for the doctors. They need to look at their patients, compare the course of the illness. Look at the course of the illness. Look at other literature outside your own specialty. Pay attention to your patient. Your patient usually will tell you what's wrong with her, and then she'll, if you listen long enough, she'll tell you how to fix her. So that's often just listen to the patient. And then the lesson for the corporate manufacturers is more detailed. You know, it has to do with testing and taking responsibility when problems do arise rather than burying them. And the lesson for the government is to get an FDA or other regulatory agency that actually is protecting the public. And I put some pretty detailed information in for both the corporate and the regulatory agencies in terms of their lessons. But, you know, this doesn't have to be a real emotional topic where everybody's, you know, fighting against everybody else like was played out in the 90s. We actually could just take responsibility for what's happened and try to fix it. And that's what I hope people do. And I hope any corporation or company that is looking to, eliminate what I'm saying thinks long and hard about doing that. I think that would not be wise for them. Anyway, I think we're approaching the end of our hour. You want to do your announcements?
How about we hear some contact information?
Okay.
From you about where the book is,
right, how it's available. Right now the book is about to be printed. It is at www.thenakedtruthaboutbreastimplants.com, all one word. And you can also find a huge amount of information, articles, and information on the holistic treatment at www.plastikos.com, P-L-A-S-T-I-K-O-S. If you don't have a computer, call me at 770-457-4677, and I'll get back with you, if you have questions about anything related to implants. So that's about it for contact information.
Yeah. I'm trying to pull up my November Lose newsletter.
I have it here.
I'm glad you do, because mine's not coming up.
Okay. On the 14th, we have Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. And that's Anna Maria Hemingway. I think there's a huge amount of evidence that shows consciousness does survive after physical death, and that's probably why we have to be very careful about what we do here while we're alive, because it doesn't end when you die. On the 21st of November, Dr. Larry Dossey is back with us with his new book, The Power of Premonitions, How Knowing the Future Can Shape Our Lives. And I haven't read that book yet, but I'm sure it contains information that we talked about during today's show, because Dr. Dossey, as you know, is a real researcher and scientific expert on what's out there, and I think the book will be great. On the 28th, we are interviewing Penny Pierce on her book, Frequency, The Power of Personal Vibration. This is a really good book. Again, the reviews are wonderful. I haven't read it yet, but hopefully we'll have a great interview with her, understand how frequency actually is extremely important, not just for our health, but finances and everything else in our life. We have Noetic Science Meeting, which is on the third Thursday of every month at 7:15 p.m. This in November, we'll have Mark Hanlon and Lawrence Perry talking about the newest HARP outputs, its profound effects on us and our planet. Many people don't know about HARP. Come to the meeting if you're in Atlanta. If not, look it up on the Internet and educate yourself, because it does influence your immune system. And I think that's about it.
Yeah, and I'm really pleased to welcome Dr. Brad Gould to the practice.
Oh, yeah, I am too. Thank goodness.
Yes.
I was having to see all the patients.
All the family practice patients.
Right, right.
And Dr. Gould is a board certified in family practice, is holistically oriented. I really like him a lot.
I do, too.
His training is excellent, and his interests are wide, including sports medicine, healthy diet, nutrition, exercise, and anti-aging medicine,
right,
herbal medicine, homeopathy. And he's a really experienced family practitioner who's willing to see the whole family.
That's true, including kids. And we've always wanted
that,
because that was often missing. Yeah, we're happy to have the whole team. Actually, we've got a great team. It's, you know, they're voting in the House today on the health care bill, so it's going to be interesting to see the new face of health care as these legislative changes come through. But I think, you know, we've always strived to help people using their insurance, which is something that more and more holistic doctors are not doing. I am on many insurance plans. Dr. Gould is on most insurance plans.
Yes, he is, and you
take insurance out of network. So we do try in these difficult economic times to work with the resources that you've already paid for. And I think that's important. I think it's important to help people who have financial challenges. Because right now, everybody does. It's just part of the landscape. Well, thanks, Rick. It was great talking with you.
Susan, I look forward to monitoring the reaction to your book.
Yeah.
And not only locally, but nationwide, because I think it's going to light a fire, so to speak.
Well, I just hope that the women and the families that don't know about this will be able to get the book, understand the disease, and get some treatment for these women so that they can get their lives back. Many of them for 20, sometimes 30 years have been sleeping their life away or chronically ill, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars looking for answers that they haven't found, because they're looking in the wrong place, you see. They're absolutely not looking in the right place. So,
and now they have one wonderful resource to help them find that. This is Temple of Health Radio Show. Your host, Dr. Rick Klofein, speaking with our founder, Dr. Susan Kolb, about her new book, The Naked Truth About Breast Implants. We're so happy to be able to bring you this information. Susan, have a great day.
You too, Rick.
And have a safe and wonderful day to all our listeners.
Thank you.